This is Brian Cambria with the KVNF Regional Newscast for Tuesday, December 24th, 2013. Democrats are still in the majority at the state capitol going into the 2014 legislative session, and with an election year looming, party leaders, including Senate President-elect Morgan Carroll, say they don't plan to push major public policy changes. They also say they won't introduce new gun control legislation or repeal stricter gun laws already in place. Benta Berkland looks ahead to the upcoming session that begins on January 8th.
Morgan Carroll replaces former Senate President John Morse, who was recalled last September over his support for stricter gun laws, including a 15-round limit on high-capacity magazines. Two other Democrats also lost their jobs for supporting the laws.
Well, it's been a difficult year for all of us, but really our number one job is moving forward, reaching out to the state.
Democrats also suffered a loss with the overwhelming defeat of Amendment 66. The statewide education initiative would have increased taxes by $1 billion to pay for reforms in K-12 schools and reduce class sizes. Carroll says the needs are still there, but this session, school districts don't want changes.
We've had a lot of reforms that have happened in the state, and most of them did not come with the funding to pay for them. So I think what we're hearing fairly consistently is please don't do radical changes, particularly if they don't come with any funding. Nobody likes unfunded mandates.
Carroll says her main goal will be improving the state's economy and helping citizens deal with the aftermath of devastating floods and wildfires. While Democrats want newly approved gun laws to stay in place, Republicans say they'll work to repeal them. Senator Ted Harvey of Highlands Ranch says Democrats overreached.
They went beyond what anybody would have thought was a rational reform, and I'm against them all, and I think they should all be repealed for one reason or another.
Governor John Hickenlooper says he won't repeal any of the current gun laws on the books. His biggest hope for the 2014 session is that partisanship takes a back seat and Colorado becomes a national model on how to work together.
If we can do things in a bipartisan way here, I guarantee you they will work out better, we'll get better outcomes and better compromises and solutions, and then other states will follow us. And eventually, who knows, you know, if we can do that within our legislature, then Congress will follow.
But both political parties are coming off a tumultuous off session, and it's also an election year. Even the governor admits his bold ambitions could easily be thwarted. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
It's been a couple of wild months for the Grand Junction Regional Airport, and it all started back in early November when FBI agents searched the airport's administrative offices and seized a handful of documents as a part of a fraud investigation. The details of that investigation have been sealed by a federal judge, but soon after the search, the Airport Authority Board launched its own probe into what exactly was going on at the airport that interested the FBI. Earlier this month, the board put the airport's aviation director, Rex Tippetts, on administrative leave, and then a couple of weeks later, it decided to fire Tippetts without giving much of an explanation. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel has been following this story and some new developments that have come out since last week. KVNF's Travis Bubenik spoke with the paper's managing editor, Mike Wiggins, about the story and the most recent news that a lawsuit has been filed against Tippetts and the Airport Authority Board.
So, Mike, can you first tell us about the details of this lawsuit?
Sure. So the lawsuit that was filed was filed by a woman by the name of Donna Van Landingham. She was the airport security coordinator for the airport. Her lawsuit lines out quite a number of allegations, primarily that there were a number of instances of fraud committed by Mr. Tippetts as well as by the Airport Authority Board, primarily relating to federal grants that the airport had obtained to build a fence at the airport a couple of years ago. She makes quite a few more allegations in addition to that, but that's the primary one that she raised.
When the FBI searched the airport offices back in November, the board sounded generally surprised and basically insinuated it didn't know exactly why that search was taking place, but According to Van Landingham's lawsuit, that's not really the case. Am I correct on that?
I think that could be a conclusion you draw from those facts, yes. I mean, if her lawsuit is accurate, if the claims that she's making in there are accurate, that the airport authority was involved in some of this, you know, nefarious conduct, then, yeah, I think you could conclude that they did, in fact, know. But it's hard to say at this point, given the information that we have at this point. You know, there hasn't been a response filed yet by Mr. Tippett's or his attorney or the airport authority's attorney. So we're kind of waiting to see on that. But yes, their initial indication when the FBI executed its search warrant at the airport authority offices was that this took them by surprise, that they did not know that this was coming. But Ms. Van Landingham's lawsuit would seem to suggest otherwise.
Now, these fraud allegations, I think you could safely say, came as a surprise to the general public. But from what I understand, there have been some internal conflicts going on at the airport since Tippett's came on board back in 2005. And some of those, from what I understand, involved some of the ways he was spending money.
The conflict that has occurred at the airport has largely involved Mr. Tippett's and the airport authority against the general aviation community. Largely the general aviation community, the private pilots who operate out at the airport, have charged that Mr. Tippett's has taken actions that have harmed their businesses, and in some cases those businesses have moved away from the airport. And it really relates to the fence that was built a couple of years ago, year and a half, 2 years ago, out at the airport. The claim is that fence restricted a lot of the public access that had previously been available to most members of the public out at the airport. So now with that new security fence, you have to have a certain type of security clearance. You have to possess an ID that you swipe. You have to go through TSA screening. There's a whole process that you have to go through in order to basically be pre-approved to get back behind that fence.
Mm-hmm. Now, this fence, I mean, what's behind this fence? Are we talking about landing strips, hangars, other facilities?
Yes, it's primarily the runway, of course, the hangars that are owned and operated out there. It's basically where all the business is done at the airport. It doesn't affect the terminal. It doesn't affect, you know, those areas of the airport. But basically every other facility and area of the airport is behind those fences. So if, for example, Federal Express has a package that they need to deliver to one of the general aviation tenants out there, they have to be escorted back there. You know, they basically have to buzz in at the fence. Somebody from one of the general aviation businesses has to take the time to come to the fence to let them in. And so it's much different than it used to be.
The Grand Junction Airport is undoubtedly a huge driver of the regional economy and has been, especially so over just about the past decade. Whatever the outcome of this federal fraud investigation, do you foresee any longer-lasting effects on the airport from this whole saga?
I think there is concern that this investigation by the FBI could affect future development and growth at the airport. I think some members of the airport authority seem confident that things will play out favorably for the airport in terms of future growth. But certainly there is that concern. If the investigation comes back and an individual or individuals are implicated on charges relating to fraud, that has the potential to affect the bond rating for the airport and their ability to, you know, secure, you know, funding in the future. I guess it's conceivable that the FAA may be reluctant to grant money to the airport in the future, since that's where the vast majority of the airport's funding in terms of capital projects comes from. So I think there is concern about what might happen, but it's hard for me to say at this point whether those fears might end up becoming reality.
I've been speaking with Mike Wiggins. He's the managing editor at the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel. The paper's been following the story of an FBI investigation into possible fraud at the Grand Junction Regional Airport. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Sure thing. Thank you.
Yesterday, the state of Colorado issued its first licenses for recreational marijuana businesses, and in so doing became the first state in U.S. history with that distinction. According to the Denver Post, the state mailed out licenses for 136 stores on Monday. Those stores, if they're approved by their local governments, can start selling pot on January 1st. State regulators also mailed out licenses to 31 makers of marijuana-infused products and 178 cultivation facilities. As the Post reports, most of those businesses are located in Denver, 102 to be exact. Barbara Broll, the head of the state's Department of Revenue, praised what she described as the enormous team effort it took to issue licenses. It's a busy time for oil and gas studies, especially here on the Western Slope. Researchers from Colorado State University are taking samples in Garfield County, with the county, oil and gas companies, and the university helping to pay the tab. The cost of the studies will be nearly $2 million. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher spoke with lead researcher Jeff Collett about what exactly he and his team are looking for.
We're trying to understand what is emitted from new well development into the air and how it's diluted as it moves away from the site. We don't really know that, and especially during the well installation. We need to understand the meteorology. We need to understand the operations at the well at the time we're making measurements. And, of course, we need to measure a broad suite of chemical compounds.
Is this ambitious, or has this been done before?
This is a pretty ambitious study. There have been studies, and there are an increasing number of studies looking at emissions from oil and gas, although a lot of them focus just on methane, which is an important greenhouse gas. Our study covers a lot more compounds, including benzene that are known air toxics, things that are known to be ozone precursors. So we're more comprehensive in terms of the types of compounds we're looking at. We also have a bigger focus on new wells. A lot of the other studies that have been done or are underway are looking at producing wells. There are some other studies that have tried to characterize these kinds of emissions, but they haven't necessarily had full cooperation from the operators, so they haven't been able to be directly on site.
And tell me a little bit more about how you'll work with operators.
So we have a number of companies that are working in Garfield County that we've basically engaged with to go on to the site. One of the keys of our approach is that we release a tracer from the emissions point at the site. It is sort of a fingerprint for what's going on, because once you emit something to the atmosphere, the winds disperse that material, and that's a difficult process to describe perfectly. By releasing the tracer, it undergoes that same sort of dispersion, the same mixing and dilution in the atmosphere.
It's not only about what oil and gas operations may be emitting into the air, but then what happens to them once they're in the weather, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right, and that's a very complicated process. And we are also taking this other approach where we try and measure the concentration at several points and use that to define a plume. Then we try and account for the effects once it's in the atmosphere.
As you well know, oil and gas operations are quite controversial in Colorado now and elsewhere in the country. And I'm wondering, what is it like working on a study where that's in the background? And I'm not suggesting that you would conduct it differently, but I would just wonder if that makes for a different experience.
There's certainly a lot more, you know, public attention to the study, especially in, we're still fairly early on in the process. The governor has mentioned this study. I'm not sure the governor ever mentioned one of my studies prior to this. So there's definitely a lot more attention. And that in a way makes it an interesting problem, because we know the findings will definitely have an impact.
Well, Professor Collett, thanks so much for taking the time to talk.
You're very welcome.
That was Elise Thatcher from Aspen Public Radio for Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a collaboration of public and community radio stations across the state. Thus concludes this morning's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.